Kind enough to join me on this Monday morning, good friend of ours and contributor to the morning show, it's Dr. Carl Kaufenthaler from the University of Akron. He is a director of the Center for Intelligence and Social Studies at the university. He's in the Department of Political Science, and I reached out to Carl to talk a little bit more about this, quote, mutiny or insurgence that we saw in Russia last week. And there's still a lot of question marks as they've gone to Belarus. What were the words exchanged? I don't know if Carl knows anything in that area, but I thought the mutiny and the insurgence that we saw in Russia was telltale on maybe where that country is right now, externally and internally. And Carl, thanks for joining us this morning. Talk about what you saw unfold in Russia last week.
Well, in some ways it wasn't surprising. There had been a lot of acrimony between Wagner fighters, this mercenary group you were talking about, and the Russian military. So on the ground, there were even exchanges of fire between these mercenaries and regular Russian soldiers. But at the top, it was even more telling that the leader of this Wagner group, Evgeny Prigozhin, would frequently issue statements, videos, where he would attack the Russian military command. So he was attacking people at the very top of the Russian military command, people who had been appointed by Putin, and he accused them of intentionally trying to kill his soldiers. Because they wouldn't supply them with ammunition, they wouldn't supply them with food, things like that. And these forces were highly dependent on the Russian military command for those kinds of things. So this guy was able to get away with saying things in Russia that would have landed most people in jail or worse. So he was clearly very powerful, but he was also clearly very upset. And it seemed that he had decided that the plan by the Russian military command to fold Wagner underneath their command. This plan was hatched a couple of months ago and was supposed to come into play last week, but this was kind of the last straw for him. And so he made his move, and his troops entered Russia and then moved up from southern Russia towards Moscow.
Carl, with what we saw, and he was, you know, miles outside of Moscow in relative being, but when we saw this insurgents march by this Wagner group, it brought to my mind right away, what is the state of this country? Are we seeing this maybe because this is a rogue agent with his forces? Or is the general feeling in that country unrest with Putin's leadership?
Well, as you can imagine, everybody and their brother is trying to interpret what actually this is about and and what it means. What are the consequences of it? So there are some things that are clear. One, we saw when Wagner's forces entered Russia from Ukraine that there was essentially no resistance. So his forces entered a city of about 1 million people called Rostov in southern Russia, and they took over the city without having to fire a shot. And we saw locals and even military, their Russian regular military, clap and welcome the Wagner fighters. So this is telling. This says something about how supportive Russians really are of the Putin regime. But I wouldn't take it too far. Because there were some people that came out on the street and clapped, and there were some people in the military that seemed to actually join Wagner's efforts, it doesn't necessarily mean that's reflective of the whole Russian population. But the general lack of resistance that they faced even moving towards Moscow tells you either there was no appetite in the Russian military to confront his forces, or once again, that there was quite a bit of sympathy. So this is something that's being looked at very carefully, obviously by the United States government, to try to figure out, okay, what does this actually mean? But clearly, one thing that we know unmistakably is that Putin is a weakened figure from this. There's no question that Putin is very embarrassed, that this is a clear indication that he's not in control of all of Russia, if you could have somebody with a private military almost come to the gates of Moscow like this. This clearly shows weakness. And you know, some people think, oh, that's a good thing. It shows Putin's weak. Maybe he can be toppled. Others, and I think I put myself in this camp, even though I have a, you know, no sympathy for Putin whatsoever, I would be in the camp that would say he's a war criminal. A destabilized Russia that's in civil war, while it might be good for the Ukrainian conflict, you know, that's the country with the largest nuclear arsenal in the world. So this is something that could be problematic. We just have to wait and see where it goes from here.
There's a couple of things I want to expand on here, and kind enough to join us this morning is Dr. Carl Kaltenthaler with the University of Akron, professor of political science and the director of Center for Intelligence and Security Studies. Prigozhin and this Wagner group, it's not like they are friends of the West, right, Carl? Many people feel that if they were able to make some inroads into Moscow and such, this guy is really aggressive. He's recruited his army of basically folks in prison, and he is really looked at globally as a dangerous figure.
Yeah, absolutely. If Prigozhin had toppled Putin and become the next leader of Russia, that would have not have been a welcome thing for the West. Prigozhin's been arguing since the invasion of Ukraine that the war needs to be escalated, and he has castigated Russia's military leadership. He's always careful not to really castigate Putin himself, but he's gone after Russia's military leadership for being weak and not executing the war as aggressively as they should. So this guy is a thug. He is a career criminal. He's a very, very nasty man who believes very strongly in violence, even violence against his own mercenaries, if he doesn't think they're doing what they need to be doing. So if he had toppled Putin, that would not have been a better thing for the West. And this is one of the things that if we look at the people who could come after Putin. So if Putin were to fall for some reason, who are the most likely successors? None of those are pro-Western, liberal-minded folks. They're people who are as, you know, anti-Western, as authoritarian-minded, at least as much as Putin, if not worse.
And
so
then
there's no light at the end of the tunnel, really, right now that we can see. And if Putin is toppled, we get a better guy.
Well said. With us is Dr. Carl Kaltenthaler with the University of Akron. I want to go back, Carl, to Vladimir Putin here, and many layers, certainly, with his security, and tough to really find out how he is thinking and where he is. But when you've got Prigozhin in this group penetrating, you've got some inside that country questioning his leadership. He's always been a dangerous figure, and as you mentioned, they have a large nuclear arsenal. I'm always leery, and a dangerous person pinned in the corner becomes more dangerous. How concerned are you now that he's getting a lot of pressure from all different angles in regards to this war about him digging into maybe more aggressive weapons in this war in the Ukraine?
Well, it's always been a concern of mine, and I don't think I'm outside the mainstream thinking about this. You know, among the people who look at this closely, national security analysts, one of the big concerns is that if Russia really starts to lose this war in the sense that, you know, their forces start to collapse on the front and there's a whole-scale retreat out of Ukraine, that would be such a devastating political situation for Putin that may force his hands to use nuclear weapons to appear strong and to save Russia's face, basically. This is a significant concern. And there's Russian military doctrine, and Russian military doctrine has a much lower threshold for the use of small-scale battlefield nuclear weapons than the United States or just about any other country that has nuclear weapons. So it's definitely not beyond the range of possibilities that Russia does move to use at least, like I said, these small-scale battlefield nuclear weapons. which should definitely not be taken to mean these are inconsequential weapons. These are still nuclear weapons. They kill a lot of people. They irradiate a large area. That radiation gets blown by the wind. It has really important negative consequences.
Carl, as you watch this war, this conflict, and certainly what is going on in the interior of Russia, there's so many different sidebar stories on how China is viewing this and how NATO is looking at this. And then, of course, how the United States is looking at where Russia is. Do they welcome this uneasiness in Russia? But as you said, others that may try to grab a hold of Russia, maybe even a worst-case scenario. With what your intel has given you and what you've read and seen, where is Russia right now in the concern level as far as aggressiveness when you look at other parts of the world, and how should NATO look at them?
Well, there's lots of other countries that are looking at Russia and are quite concerned about it. You know, many of the former Soviet states are very concerned that Putin has the plan to somehow turn to them next and try to reabsorb them into some recreation of the Russian Empire. And not a communist Soviet Union, but a recreated Russian Empire. I can tell you the Chinese are looking at this with real concern, partially because this is so destabilizing. It's destabilizing for the world. It's destabilizing for China's relationships with the West, because the West is looking at China and saying, okay, are you backing Russia in this? And really holding China's feet to the fire. But very importantly, the Chinese are concerned about two things. One, that Russia becomes unstable and that they have chaos in Russia. That's bad for China, because China depends on Russia to be a reliable partner against the United States. Two, they don't want this to escalate. The last thing the Chinese want is that the Russians use nuclear weapons. And in fact, the Chinese, we know, have told the Russians, under no circumstances are you to use nuclear weapons. So China is very concerned about what they see. They've got a partner that looks like it's kind of lost control of itself. A war that is not something that China wants is going on. The United States government, as far as I can look at, looks at the situation as a real mess, in the sense that Russia's coming about at the seams, it seems like. And I just explained how that can have consequences for the United States. But also, as this war drags on, it's costing the United States a lot of money, and there's big concerns about the political will of people in the United States to continue to support this war. So this war is a in many ways nightmare scenario for many countries. It's keeping them from focusing on what they want to focus on, and there's no real clear endpoint that anybody can see right now. This could drag on for years.
Carl,
and it could continue to destabilize Russia.
Yeah, in so many ways, it doesn't look like there's going to be anything that comes out of this war that is uplifting, for sure. When you talk globally, the Ukraine, no matter what area you turn to, and as Carl mentioned, politically and financially, it has been a downturn, not only in the United States, but globally. Carl, great visit
Absolutely.
With us this morning. Thank you for the time to visit. I knew you'd have great insight. You always do, my friend. So thank you for the time. Always appreciate it.
My pleasure.